Welcome to an excerpt of the CME activity, Raising Awareness, Late Preterm Birth and Non-Medically Indicated Deliveries Prior to 39 Weeks, which is certified by the American Academy of Nurse Practitioners and Medscape, and presented by Alan Guttmacher, MD, Catherine Spong, MD, Jane Lamp, MS, RNBC, CNS, Karna Murthy, MD, and Anne Moore, APN. Dr. Guttmacher is a director, Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, National Institutes of Health, Bethesda, Maryland. Dr. Guttmacher has disclosed no relevant financial relationships. Dr. Guttmacher does not intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Guttmacher does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Spong is a chief, pregnancy and perinatology branch, Eunice Kennedy Shriver, National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, Bethesda, Maryland. Dr. Spong has disclosed no relevant financial relationships. Dr. Spong does not intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Spong does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Ms. Lamp is a clinical nurse specialist, Riverside Methodist Hospital. Member, Association of Women's Health, Obstetric and Neonatal Nurses, Late Preterm Infant Science Team, Columbus, Ohio. Ms. Lamp has disclosed no relevant financial relationships. Ms. Lamp does not intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Ms. Lamp does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Murthy is an attending physician, Neonatology Children's Memorial Hospital, Assistant Professor of Pediatrics, Northwestern University, Chicago, Illinois. Dr. Murthy has disclosed no relevant financial relationships. Dr. Murthy does not intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Murthy does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Ms. Moore is a professor of nursing, Vanderbilt University. Fellow, American Academy of Nurse Practitioners, Nashville, Tennessee. Ms. Moore has disclosed the following relevant financial relationships. She served as a speaker or a member of a speaker's bureau for Bayer Healthcare Pharmaceuticals. She served as an advisor or consultant for Bayer Healthcare Pharmaceuticals. Ms. Moore does not intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Ms. Moore does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. The goal of this activity is to discuss the challenges associated with the diagnosis and management of late preterm birth. This activity is supported by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.
Hello, I'm Alan Guttmacher, the director of the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. It's my pleasure to welcome you to this continuing education program on increasing awareness about the growing problems of late preterm birth and of non-medically indicated term inductions prior to 39 weeks gestation. 2 years ago, NICHD came together with 32 other federal agencies and professional organizations that focus on child and maternal health to create the National Child and Maternal Health Education Program. Our objective is to identify key challenges in child and maternal health, review the relevant research, identify research gaps, initiate activities, and propose solutions to advance the field. The National Child and Maternal Health Education Program Coordinating Committee identified the growing incidence of late preterm birth and of non-medically indicated term inductions prior to 39 weeks gestation as a high priority and the first issue that this new national education program should address. The goal of this continuing education program is to raise awareness around this significant issue and communicate the message that, even though 37 weeks is technically term, it's important for all pregnancies without complications that would increase maternal or fetal risk to reach 39 weeks. Further, that delivery prior to 39 weeks is appropriate only if medically indicated and with documented fetal lung maturity, as specified by American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists guidelines. This education program is designed to inform the practices of the wide spectrum of providers who take care of pregnant women in pursuit of our common goal of healthy mothers and babies. I hope you find this roundtable discussion useful. I now would like to introduce Dr. Kathy Spong, Chief of the Pregnancy and Perinatology Branch at the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, who will moderate this discussion.
Thanks, Dr. Guttmacher. I'm Dr. Catherine Spong, and I'd like to welcome you to this Medscape CME and CE Spotlight panel discussion entitled Raising Awareness, Late Preterm Birth in Non-Medically Indicated Deliveries Prior to 39 Weeks. I'm joined today for this panel discussion by Ms. Jane Lamp, a clinical nurse specialist at Riverside Methodist Hospital in Columbus, Ohio, and a member of the Association of Women's Health, Obstetric and Neonatal Nurses Late Preterm Infant Science Team. Dr. Karna Murthy, an attending physician of neonatology and assistant professor of pediatrics at Northwestern University in Chicago, Illinois. And Ms. Ann Moore, a professor of nursing at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee, and a fellow of the American Academy of Nurse Practitioners. The objectives of today's program are to identify the factors contributing to the rising rate of late preterm births and non-medically indicated deliveries prior to 39 weeks, and to identify the short and long-term potential consequences of births occurring between 34 and 38 weeks gestation. This includes births in the late preterm period, those at 34 through 36 weeks, and infants born prior to 39 weeks, thus at 37 to 38 weeks gestation, without an indication. Finally, to integrate the best practice evidence based on guidelines for delivery prior to 39 weeks. First, let's review the scope of the problem. In 2007, 12.7% of births were preterm in the United States. Of these, late preterm births, those births between 34 and 36 weeks gestation, account for 70% of preterm births. Thus, in 2007, there were nearly 400,000 late preterm births in the United States, representing about 9% of the live births in this country. There are numerous contributing factors to preterm birth. However, despite much research over the last several decades, many causes of preterm birth are not clear. Of these factors, Anne, can you name some that contribute to these deliveries?
Well, absolutely. Issues such as maternal age, infertility treatments, multiple gestations, maternal obesity, maternal comorbid conditions, things like hypertension, diabetes, pregnancy-induced hypertension, intrauterine growth restriction, or we used to call it intrauterine growth retardation, but reassuring fetal surveillance. Prior stillbirth is another issue, as well as incorrect dating, which we see with ultrasound quite a bit. So the ultrasonographer perhaps gives a date that is maybe not consistent with dates based on the last menstrual period, but for whatever reason, the clinician goes with the ultrasound dating of the pregnancy and thereby delivers an infant that is at 37 weeks, 36 weeks, when the understanding was that the fetus, the infant, was going to be larger or bigger or more mature, I should say, than that. And then maternal request. We're seeing that quite a bit where I think the information to consumers has been inappropriate. And by that I mean young women or women will come in and say, I want to have my baby on my husband's birthday. Or I want to have my baby when my other child was born. Or I want to have my baby on Valentine's Day. And I think they clearly don't understand the risks associated with making those requests. And unfortunately, some clinicians are willing to buy into those requests. And maybe because they're so pressured by the individual or the couple. And that's really unfortunate because all too often a baby is born too soon.
Karna, do you have anything to add?
You know, we've seen a decline in the stillbirth and post-dates pregnancies over the last 1 to 2 decades. And perhaps a unintended consequence of that decline in post-dates delivery has been an increase in these late preterm births and children born just less than term as well. And I think we have to be cognizant of that we have achieved a benefit of reducing these later date pregnancies and stillbirths, and this consequence is something that we have to deal with going forward.
Now let's discuss the consequences of these births. What are the health risks for infants who are delivered at 34 to 36 and 6/7 weeks gestation and the infants delivered at 37 and 38 weeks of gestation? Jane, would you identify some of the common morbidities for late preterm births?
Certainly. Late preterm babies are at greater risk for respiratory distress syndrome, transient tachypnea of the newborn, pneumonia. Feeding problems are common with these early babies, as well as hypothermia, hypoglycemia, jaundice, culture-proven sepsis, and intraventricular hemorrhage. Neurocognitive outcomes, including special education needs, are a common package of problems that a late preterm could encounter.
Karna, can you give us some specific numbers about that risk of respiratory complications for these babies?
Sure, Kathy. The incidence of respiratory distress syndrome is well described to rise with decreasing gestational age. And for children in the late preterm period, approximately 10% of infants born at 34 weeks have respiratory distress syndrome that requires medical therapy, including mechanical ventilation and surfactant administration. Compared with children at 38 and 39 weeks gestation, those children have about a 0.3% risk of these needs and therapies after birth. Pneumonia is more common among children at 34 weeks, approximately 1.5% pneumonia at this gestational age. And also, there seems to be a rise in the need for support for respiratory failure at 34 to 36 weeks gestation. Those children require therapies approximately 1.6% of the time compared to children born at term, which is about 0.2% of those infants.
Jane, can you describe some of the reasons for these feeding problems?
Certainly. Late preterm babies are not as developed so that they don't have a sense of being hungry. They are immature and they don't send out feeding cues to their mothers. They tend to fatigue easily as they are trying to coordinate their feeding, sucking, swallowing, breathing, and all of that leads to a need for much more support at the bedside with babies that are feeding, especially breastfeeding babies.
Karna, there was an idea that some of these problems are actually intertwined. Can you speak to that?
Of course. Children who have feeding difficulties are certainly more likely to have hypoglycemia. Some of the causes of that, those feeding difficulties, can be perhaps immature temperature regulation among those infants. And so these addressing of these problems become a multidisciplinary approach, often in a neonatal intensive care unit. Those children often need to be separated from their mothers in such an environment, which leads to both the medical interventions required in the NICU as well as the delayed psychosocial bonding with parents.
And Anne, how about hospital readmissions? Are they more common in these infants?
Definitely. And what we see from a standpoint of maternal-infant bonding and maternal sequelae is that, you know, there's a disconnect. There is certainly a higher risk of postpartum depression. There is the issue of, you know, if the infant is admitted to the hospital, will the parent be allowed to accompany the infant back to the hospital? And many times that's not the case. So, you know, the new mother is too often put in a situation where she is literally shuffling back and forth between a residence and a hospital setting that may not be as welcoming as we would like for it to be. And so there's the entire perspective of the birth experience is really not realized. And that leads to, you know, multiple issues as a new mother tries to adjust just to the role of being a parent. So I think that that's overlooked as well. I think that the idea that you're going to go home with a healthy baby and stay there is the perception that all new mothers have. And it's really unfortunate that oftentimes this can't happen in a late preterm delivery.
And often these hospital readmissions are for things like jaundice and feeding difficulties, dehydration, and sepsis. Is that right?
Right. And building into what Jane was saying, the problem with feeding, particularly if the baby's jaundiced, is they're feeling not well. You know, the issue of being jaundiced in and of itself fatigues the newborn, makes the baby less likely to be interested in nursing, and so the whole problem sort of builds on itself to create kind of a perfect storm. So the dehydration occurs because the nutrition is lacking, because the infant isn't interested in nursing, because he's got the or she has the jaundice issue going on, and it just blows up into kind of a perfect storm. It's really unfortunate.
Feeds on each other, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now there's a nice image of two brains, a baby's brain at 35 weeks of gestation and showing how well it's formed, and then a baby's brain at 40 weeks of gestation with the formation of that brain itself. And you can see the stark differences between those two brains at 35 weeks and 40 weeks. Jane, would you like to speak to that point?
Yes, especially in the last 6 weeks of pregnancy. That's a vital time for the brain to develop in the neonate, and it is the size of the brain as well as the white cortical and gray cortical matter that has not developed well, and this leads to the behavioral, neurobehavioral immaturity that we see in the late preterms.
And as I understand, during this time period between 35 and 40 weeks is really the time when the brain volume basically doubles.
Is that right?
And often this is the time where the babies are learning to acquire those neonatal reflexes and impulses mm-hmm. that contribute to the successful transition to extrauterine life, such as feeding, such as temperature regulation, and that growth and maturation is occurring at a rapid rate during this key time period.
And I think we could add that the maternal newborn interaction is different with a premature baby, so that there is a potential for altered attachment and bonding because the baby is not as interactive or responding with his mother.
I agree.
How about the long-term consequences then? Here we've seen some of the short-term consequences. We've seen why this might happen due to the development of the baby's brain. What about the long-term consequences? Carney, would you like to speak to that?
So there are studies that have shown both a higher mortality and morbidity among late preterm infants. For example, there have been developmental delays described and school-related problems in a study from Scotland, such that children born just prior to term at the 37 to 38 weeks gestation have approximately a 5% risk of special educational needs when they reach school age in their childhood. These needs could persist. They include reading and spelling disabilities. Many of them focus on receptive language throughout the early childhood education. And even more to the point, at 8 to 10 years, really long-term development through childhood, their cognitive scoring on standardized testing has been lower compared to children born at term. Another very interesting finding that's been shown here in the United States is that those children born at late preterm births have been shown to have quite a significantly higher chance of having cerebral palsy, nearly a threefold higher chance compared with children born at term here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Now let's shift our discussion from these late preterm births, these births at 34 through the completed 36 weeks of gestation, to those deliveries at 37 and 38 weeks. They're term, but they're in the beginning part of the term period, and they're before 39 weeks, which is when it's felt to be comfortable to deliver. In these babies who are electively delivered at 37 to 38 weeks, meaning there's not a medical reason or not an obstetrical reason, is there any increase in morbidity? Anne, would you like to speak to that?
Sure. Clearly, I think this is where we have felt for quite some time that we're in the safety zone. And unfortunately, what we're seeing, or fortunately, because I think we're becoming aware of it now, we're seeing that neonates that are born beyond 37 weeks, 37, 38 weeks, do have a higher incidence of admission to the NICU versus those babies that are born closer to the 40-week mark. There are higher rates of respiratory problems, transient tachypnea of the newborn. Babies requiring ventilator assistance also fall into this group of the 37, 38-week gestational age time frame. Difficulties in breastfeeding. I think the mantra of, you know, as long as you can stay in, so to speak, with a pregnancy, taking into consideration you don't want to go post-term, but we're seeing more and more compelling information that says this is the best strategy for a healthy newborn. Jaundice can occur in a 37, 30, 38-week baby. Hypothermia. And there's an increased risk of cerebral palsy, again, in neonates delivered prior to 40 weeks. So the longer they can stay, the closer they can get to the 40-week mark, 39 to 40 weeks, the better the outcome all the way around.
And this, of course, speaks to the point that it's an elective delivery. It's not an indicated delivery.
Yes, absolutely.
So not to try to prolong a pregnancy that needs to be delivered because the mom or the baby needs to.
Correct.
But for these elective deliveries, probably the best environment is going to be intrauterine until 39 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, are there any maternal consequences to preterm birth?
Well, I think we see certainly the increased incidence of postpartum depression. And I think the literature supports that this occurs in primiparous women probably more than multiparous women who have an infant that is, again, not the baby that goes home from the hospital. Maybe that's a 37-week gestation, 38-week gestation, but the baby doesn't come home with the mother. Not the plan that she had. Post-traumatic stress syndrome, as Jane and I were discussing earlier, that tends to be an issue as well that we kind of don't really look at so much. If you don't discuss it, it's not a problem kind of approach. And then when you're looking at intentional delivery, and I'm going to say here not for indications such as, you know, maternal or neonatal compromise, but you certainly increase the risk of a cesarean delivery. And in that package comes the risk of wound infection, febrile morbidity, and anemia on the part of the mother. So she's compromised as well.
Right. Now let's discuss the consequences of these births. Specifically, what are the health risks for infants who are born between 34 weeks and 36 and 6/7 weeks of gestation, as well as those infants who are born in the 37th and 38th week of gestation? Focusing first on mortality, Karna, can you tell us about the mortality for these late preterm infants, those born at 34 to 36 weeks?
Sure. A few studies have defined that late preterm infants are more likely to endure mortality in the perinatal period as well as in the first year of life. Specifically, late preterm infants are 6 times more likely than full-term infants to die in the first week of life. Also, they're three times more likely to die during the first year of life after their birth. Some studies have even talked about a higher risk of SIDS, the sudden infant death syndrome, during that first year of life where a cause of death is not able to be determined.
Let's move on to a discussion of the best practices for reducing preterm birth. The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists has identified the prevention of preterm birth to be a public health priority, urging clinicians to reduce the number of voluntary inductions and elective cesarean deliveries prior to 39 weeks when no medical indication exists.
Kathy, it's important to emphasize that we're not discussing these indicated deliveries for a maternal or fetal cause. If a baby or a mother has a complication requiring delivery, these certainly should occur.
However, it seems like over the last decade or so, the threshold to induce women has been lowered, and has contributed to the increased birth rates prior to 39 weeks. Mm-hmm. And this is demonstrated by the rising rates of induction at all gestational ages between 34 and 38 weeks gestation. Some of this may have been driven by the improvements in neonatal medicine over the last 10 to 15 to 20 years and the technology that clinicians now have to afford themselves to take care of these babies. However, this is really balanced with the trade-off because the infant mortality is probably higher for these children, and due to the larger burden of late preterm infants, there's a larger population at risk for mortality later in their infancy.
Right, because remember, late preterm births account for 70% of all of the preterm births, so
absolutely,
it is a huge burden.
A huge problem.
It's important to make the distinction then between pregnant women requesting to be delivered prior to 39 weeks and those that versus those that are have medical indications for such. Practitioners that are balancing the risk-benefit of continued fetal health and expectant management versus delivery are vital in promoting the healthy outcomes for babies and mothers.
So the practitioner has to weigh whether it's better for the pregnancy to continue or for the pregnancy to be delivered at these gestational ages, as at any time in pregnancy.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And I think women have to be informed that it is not a safe option to determine that they want their child born at 37 weeks, 36 weeks. I've heard women say, I want my baby born now because the baby will be smaller. And my sister's child was born at 34 weeks, and he's doing just fine. So I think there's a misperception that, and I think this builds into the technology that we have, that these babies survive. But I think one of the things that we're looking at pretty specifically here is the quality of that survival and the long-term outcome. So the longer the baby stays in the uterus, barring any medical problems, neonatal problems, the better, providing, of course, we don't go into a post-dates situation. I think the other thing is that women don't appreciate the fact that a C-section delivery is often connected with an induction, a late preterm or early term, if you want to put it in those terms, induction. So I think they have to be alerted to the fact that this is not a benign process for either the mother or the neonate or the infant, and operative deliveries are fairly common when an elective induction takes place.
Especially when the cervix is unfavorable, which is common at this gestation.
Absolutely so, yeah.
Jane, can you describe the Ohio Perinatal Quality Collaborative Initiative?
Yes, Ohio is one of at least seven states now that is doing a state-based perinatal quality collaborative, which is a formal process to take a look at ways to improve maternal fetal outcomes, maternal and newborn outcomes. And one of the criteria they're looking at is the percent of scheduled deliveries less than 39 weeks. And there will be a figure to demonstrate the improvement based on this formal process of those deliveries. And they've had a lot of success with that.
So as this initiative has gone into place, the rate of those deliveries, elective deliveries before 39 weeks, has declined.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has.
So what are some of the initiatives that have been put into place to try to reduce these deliveries less than 39 weeks?
Yes, Kathy, the collaborative has implemented several formal processes to hold practitioners accountable and providing and supporting the completion of an informed consent for parents to know the risk of having a baby before 39 weeks, and that's been very helpful.
Are there other key points for these initiatives? Because there are many initiatives, as I understand, across the country now, trying to reduce deliveries less than 39 weeks. So let's share some of these key points that we've heard about from these initiatives. Anne, would you like to start?
Well, I think we have to revisit the idea of quality care. We have to revisit the idea that a pregnancy is 40 weeks. And I think maybe we're revisiting that initiative in this particular situation. And I applaud our efforts to, you know, to not only educate the patients, but also educate the clinicians. I'm involved in nurse practitioner education, and one of the things that I focus on is the benefit of having a term gestation, a true term gestation. So I think that's one of the salient points that has to be looked at in medical schools, in nursing schools, and you know, clearly communicated to the population, to the consumer. And we have to look at you know, who the stakeholders are in achieving this reform, and you know, getting away from the idea that it's okay to induce it at 37, 38 weeks, to have that smaller baby, to undergo an operative procedure, and identify what those barriers might be so that we can, you know, kind of blow past them and get the real message out to everybody.
I think we have to also spend our efforts educating the clinicians, the hospitals, nurses, and fundamentally our patients on the higher risks of neonatal and maternal morbidities that we were discussing associated with deliveries prior to 39 weeks. And you know, initially that's going to be predictably met with some resistance to overcome that learning curve, but sustaining that buy-in over time is going to help this population of women achieve healthier peripartum outcomes.
And you know, along those lines, how great would it be to have a culture of improvement develop and be sustained so that we can actually monitor, report, communicate our outcomes and our successes and share across the country so that we can improve the outcomes?
Absolutely. I think we've seen one of the key points that's come across from many of these initiatives is that peer review process and reviewing these deliveries and reviewing the process measures associated with it. I think that's very, very important.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
By implementing these strategies, you can get significant decreases then in overall induction rates, elective induction rates, deliveries at less than 39 weeks, and cesarean deliveries, especially in elective deliveries of nulliparous patients or women in their first pregnancy. And many of these initiatives, one such as is the one that Jane spoke about, you can see a dramatic decline when these initiatives are put into place. Because, of course, our goal is to improve the outcome for both the mom and for the baby. Mm-hmm. Another important thing that we need to consider and discuss is how we can communicate the risks to both the patients and to the clinicians. Karna, do you want to start talking about that?
I think it's clear from this discussion and from what's known in our fields that the best outcomes for the babies are for those deliveries that occur at or after 39 weeks, provided there is no medical obstetric indication for delivery on behalf of either the mother or the fetus. And in that setting, delivery is certainly warranted at the clinician's discretion. Both the clinicians and the patients need to be, you know, very aware of the complications of these deliveries prior to 39 weeks and all the ramifications we've been discussing so far. However, we still need to spend our time working on the outcomes, the research, and the improvement of these outcomes over time, using evidence that we can gain from clinical research studies, from laboratory science, as well as from monitoring our practices in large populations over time.
And the community resources.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that we seem, as we gain more knowledge, we seem to be moving back to some of the basics. And I've seen this from what I would call aggressive management of labor to a situation now where we don't monitor, for example, as much as we used to. We have a little more control on the part of the mother and a little more of a natural process. So I'm encouraged to see that we're looking now at pregnancy as something that should take place over a 40-week time frame. That aggressive management or interventional management is now not being seen as this perhaps the standard of care, and I think everyone's benefiting from that.
Mm-hmm. So in wrap-up, let's share some key points that we've garnered over this discussion. We'll start with Jane.
Well, Kathy, late preterm babies commonly remain with their mothers in the hospital, and yet they're at increased risk and require increased and prolonged surveillance. And so that is a concern, as these babies often can be mainstreamed and appear to be mature, that practitioners and parents recognize that they do have special needs.
An argument that I've heard in my practice of neonatology is that there has been significant advances in neonatal care over the past two decades that may have shifted the risk to the infant from this immediate perinatal period or just prior to delivery to perhaps even now more chronic morbidities of infant mortality, cerebral palsy, hospital stays. And these risks are ones that I think need to be communicated in a balanced manner to parents prior to the initiation of deliveries, especially among women who either have no medical indication or whose indications may not be clearly balanced towards a movement towards delivery at that time.
And I think we have to, again, as I said before, educate patients about what is the healthier approach to pregnancy and delivering a term baby, looking at the emotional burden, the physical burden, and the financial burden that goes along with mistiming or requesting an interventional delivery for non-medical reasons. So I hope that this kind of information gets out and is embraced by clinicians, and we translate that to patients so they'll get a better understanding of what a normal, healthy pregnancy should look like.
And keeping on that theme, clearly there are risks to delivering before 39 weeks. In some cases, these risks are absolutely appropriate when the mom or the baby requires delivery for a medical or obstetrical indication. I'd like to thank you, especially to thank Jane, Karna, and Anne, for joining us today in this panel discussion, and to thank you, the audience, for joining us. Please continue to the CME and CE post-test.
Thank you for listening to this excerpt of the CME activity, Raising Awareness, Late Preterm Birth and Non-Medically Indicated Deliveries Prior to 39 Weeks. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.